Hello, I'm Stephanie Lieb, and happy September 2020. Between what's been happening in our world and my move from Phoenix to Flagstaff, Arizona, I took the summer off from this podcast, but Gabbin with Mavens is back. For information about how to protect yourself or someone you love from COVID-19, or what to do if you or someone that you love is sick, please visit the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at cdc.gov. For mental health resources, please visit the National Alliance on Mental Illness at NAMI.org, N-A-M-I, or call the NAMI helpline at 800-950-6264. If you are in the middle of a mental health crisis, you can text NAMI, N-A-M-I, to 741-741 for 24/7 confidential free crisis counseling. Please do your part to keep yourself and your loved ones as safe and healthy as possible, physically, mentally, and emotionally, now and always. We are all in this together. It has always been a dream of mine to have a talk show, a forum where I can interview a maven of his or her field about themselves and their area of expertise so that listeners can hopefully learn a little something along the way. So I started this podcast in late 2019. If you haven't already, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at StephNLieb for a fun behind-the-scenes look at this podcast and my life. If you or someone that you know would make a good guest maven, please contact me. Also, be sure to subscribe to, rate, and review Gabbin with Mavens wherever you listen to your podcasts. Welcome to the 12th episode of Gabbin with Mavens. I am so excited for you to hear from this week's maven, Stephen Chilton, an expert on all things live music and music venues. He will be on with us in just a minute. I am thrilled to introduce you to this week's guest on Gabbin with Mavens, Stephen Chilton, an expert on all things live music and music venues. He is the owner of Psycho Steve Presents, which he's owned for 20 years, the music venue in Phoenix, Arizona, the Rebel Lounge, which opened 5 years ago, and most recently is the vice president of NIVA, the National Independent Venue Association, which was just founded in April, a few months ago. So Stephen and I have been friends for years, and I think originally I met you downtown at some various music venue, probably. probably Crescent Ballroom or Valley Bar, since it was that long ago I think we met.
It would have been way before Valley Bar.
You're probably right. I think it was probably Crescent. Stephen was just definitely one of those people that showed me just the extra cool parts of downtown Phoenix and how cool it can be and why I loved going down there. He has personally lived in downtown Phoenix since 2008 and actively worked down there since about 2000. So, you know, the fun part, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background growing up, and then kind of what led you to become this expert in live music and music venues?
Oh, well, I grew up in Mesa,
Arizona.
Yeah, Mesa, Arizona, went to ASU. When I started going to concerts when I was like 16, immediately dove into, you know, punk rock and local shows and small events. And pretty shortly after, you know, all my friends in high school were in bands. And I kind of went to more shows and knew more people and knew the venues. And I used to go to concerts a lot by myself. And when you go to a concert by yourself, you like meet, you know, ended up meeting people I probably wouldn't have if I was going with friends, just because I was a little more, my parents were a little more loose. They let me go out on the weekdays more than some of my friends or I just did, whichever.
Unlike my parents.
Yeah. And so I would just, you know, all my friends who were playing in bands in high school that were my friends didn't know anyone, and I did. And so was trying to help my friends get on shows. And then this guy, Scott, who was working at running Modified at the time.
Modified Arts.
Yeah, Modified Arts, when it was still more known as a music venue than an art gallery, or, you know, it was a gallery and music venue, but I knew it as a music venue. And
yeah, when did it stop being a music venue?
Maybe 2009?
That sounds right.
Yeah, something like that. somewhere around there. But the guy, this guy Scott, who was running it at the time, kind of finally was like, "Hey, kid, you're not. I'm not going to book these bands on these shows you keep asking about. But I'll give you a Friday night, and you can book your own show with them all." And I went, "I can do that." You know, he, you know, let me book a show, and then a month or two later, I did another show, and then, you know, one show turned into, you know, one show every couple months turned into a show a month, turned into a couple shows a month. And then all at ASU, all through college, I was just booking my own punk rock shows and kind of part of that.
And so how were you finding the bands at that time? I mean, obviously you had some friends in bands, but were you also going out and seeking people out of state or in state, or?
It kind of grew out of state, but like one of the ones is, you know, it was kind of unique in that when I went to ASU, I mean, that advantage of, you know, already living here, but by the time I was 18 and going to ASU, most of my social network was not my friends from high school. It was, I had friends from all over Phoenix from the music scene and from bands, right, from venues. And so like that normal, oh, we're leaving high school break in like your friends didn't happen for me, because I, most of my social network by that point was already this broader music scene friend. Yeah. You know? And so when I went to ASU, there was no break in my friend, all my community or whatever, because I wasn't doing, I wasn't really involved in student life or any,
right,
because I was involved in this music, in the Phoenix music scene that was separate from that. And, you know, that whole try to meet people in college or whatever, I was like, well, I'm going to go to these the same shows I was going to before.
So when did you start, when did you start booking for Modified Arts?
I started doing shows there in 2000. So okay, in high school, I was 17. Wow. 17. And like the first concert I was ever involved in, I produced and put on. Like I didn't intern anywhere until later. I didn't work for anyone. The first event I ever had any hand in, I produced myself. Like,
and who was that?
A band, Redfield, who was a big local band at the time, and a band, Manhattan Project, that was like the cool band at my high school. And
okay,
you know, and then, you know, it was like pretty soon all my, everyone else in high school was like, oh, you can book shows, you can get us on shows at and it just, you know, it just gradually
spiraled from there.
There was no like big turning point. It just became, you know, went from a show a month to two shows a month to three shows a month to
yeah,
a couple shows a week. And then last year we did, I put on produced over 600 concerts. And
wow,
you know, so
not just at your venue, right?
Not just at our venue, and yeah, all the way up to festivals. We did a festival, 8123 Fest, last year. And so mm-hmm, everything from 20 people at Rebel to 5,000 people watching the main. So, and everything mm-hmm, clean. And, you know, there was, it just grew very slowly and gradually, a few shows, you know, and then yeah, this friend introduced me to that friend, you know, hey, my mm-hmm, friend band. And, you know, then my friend Ben were like, oh, we got an agent, you should work with them now. And then it was like, oh, great, I'll work with that agent. And they're like, well, you helped me out with that band, can you help me out with some other bands? And it was like, it just, you know, just grew very, it grew very slowly at first.
So before you owned the venue, okay, let's walk back. So you went from Modified Arts, and then you started producing all these shows. When did Psycho Steve happen? When did that officially happen?
The first show definitely didn't say Psycho Steve Present on it. It would have been very, very early, because that was a joke in high, Psycho Steve was a joke in high school. And so it definitely would be like 2000, 2001. It was before college. And
okay,
some of my friends jokingly said, you should put Psycho Steve Presents on the flyer. And so as a joke, I did. And then, you know, 20 years later, it's still there. And so the first several shows didn't have that on there. And then I intermittently used it for a couple of years. Sometimes I'd put it on a flyer, sometimes I wouldn't. Like, uh-huh, like there was no rhyme or reason, or, you know.
And pretty quickly you started booking shows at other venues besides yeah, Modified, right? So
yeah,
next thing you know, that's what I mean. Next thing you know, through the Psycho Steve umbrella, you kind of went off on your own and started doing that all over the valley, right?
Yeah, and then eventually all over, I do stuff in Flagstaff and Tucson, and it,
yep,
you know, for a long time, it was just me. I was a one person operation until 5 years ago, you know, right before Rebel was kind of really when I first hired a first real employee.
You realized you needed an employee.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was doing over 100 shows a month, 100 shows a year at that point
with
by myself. And, you know, and it just got to the point where it needed to grow. And so,
yeah. Yeah. So how many employees do you have with that right now?
Well, with COVID,
COVID,
sort of two part time at the moment via COVID, but yeah, it was five in the office, somewhat full time, and plus the venue staff, plus a whole a range of people that helped out on individual sort of projects. So
during the dream days. Yeah, and then walk us through. So then you, you and partners, right? I think, bought the Rebel Lounge in what year?
Yeah. It was 2015. We opened at, well, sort of skipping that. I was like, before that, I, for a while was working at possibly when I met you was working at Crescent Ballroom. I worked for Stateside Presents in Crescent Ballroom,
mm-hmm.
and helped open Crescent. But the whole time I was working for Crescent and Stateside, I was still doing my own show. So I was doing my shows with Psycho Steve, and I was working for them.
Right.
Some shows for Stateside and some shows for myself. And I was booking my own shows at Crescent, and it was all blurry. And really the turning point there was a time one where my shows were taking up too much of my time, and I was full time with them. And it was like, mm-hmm. one of them had to give. And so, you know, one of the two had to give because I wasn't able to commit to the time to that job. And my shows were suffering because I was too committed there. And so I left Crescent, and then a year or two later, probably a year and a half later, what used to be the Mason Jar came up, and me and a partner, decided to do what became Rebel. So that was 5 years ago. And we still book shows all over Arizona outside of Rebel too. So it's
So you kind of went off besides like just booking for Crescent or this or that, you know, you kind of fully still have your booking side of things. And then obviously you were a venue owner too. So kind of doing both those things at once. And then you finally, like you said, realized that you needed to hire some staff to help. So that's good.
Yeah. And
you were working really hard. I remember when I met you. So
and it kind of Rebel was always a piece of the, you know, very much felt like a piece of the broader puzzle because it's, you know, we're a 300 cap venue. That's a like my business has always been built around developing acts and developing artists and being that first place you play, that first venue you play when you play Phoenix for the first time.
Yeah.
Building relationships at Rebel with artists and then bringing them out of Rebel into bigger venues, taking them to Crescent, taking them to the venue, and taking them to Marquee or Rialto. And, you know, so many of them.
Yeah, it's really about giving kind of those newer guys exposure a little bit, right?
Yeah. And actually, almost all the biggest artists I work with because I was working with them when they weren't big, you know, being able to build that relationship and last, you know, oftentimes.
No, and that's such a testament to, you know, all the businesses you run and just your friendships and your social circle is just, you know, being able to keep those relationships is such a big part of what you do. So.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, you know, one I always enjoy, sometimes when I'll book a big act, it'll be, you know, I'll get from people like, oh my God, it's so great that Mitski is finally coming to Arizona or Frank Turner's finally coming to Arizona. And I'll be like, what are you talking about? I've brought them here 10 times before. You know, you just didn't notice that. And then now, you know, their second or third record blows up and everyone suddenly like, oh my God, this band. And you're like,
they're jumping on the bandwagon, you would say.
Yeah. We've been working with them for sometimes years by the time they have that moment. And
yeah. But that's because you put in that time with them and you know, believed in them in the early days. And like you said, and that's why so many of the bands that you work with today, you've been working with for years and helped them grow, really. So in the venue side of things, so walk us through, you know, I love Phoenix history or Arizona history. So Yeah, so walk us through. So what was that building originally? When was it built? What was it before?
I think it was built in the 50s, either the 40s or the 50s. I'm not exactly
sure. Which is really, really early for Arizona.
Yeah, and so it's been a nightclub that whole time, as far as I know. And I think it was originally called the Branding Iron, if I remember right, and was like a tonk, did vaudeville and burlesque shows back in the 50s. And then eventually a new thing called rock and roll. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure the whole timeline, but in 79, it opened as the Mason Jar, which is what it's most famously known as. And so the Mason Jar in the 80s and 90s was like the rock, punk rock, metal club. Everyone played there, their first in Phoenix. Nirvana played there, Metallica, Guns N' Roses, Pearl Jam, Tool, Green Day, you name it, like all those rock guys. Linkin Park's first like public show with Chester Bennington was at the Mason Jar.
And when did it close? I forgot.
It closed in 2005, and then it was a series of other bars.
Of course.
So there was a couple of other bars in between, and then it was pretty run down and gutted.
Walk us through, I mean, that's such a different side of the business, right? So walk us through like the construction stuff and all of that that you had to kind of figure out.
Yeah, and it's luckily my partner on it is a big developer in town. He's done lots of projects like this.
Oh,
and
good.
So, you know, that was a learning curve for me, having never done something like that.
You mean like pulling permits and stuff?
Yeah, all of that side of it, dealing with contractors, dealing with timelines.
Everyone in my family's in real estate, so unfortunately I know too much about that. But
yeah, I knew very little about that, you know.
That's super cool to learn, though.
Yeah, no, it was great. And it was a big jump because from just having worked at venue, you know, promoted worked at venues to suddenly being a little bit on the other side.
You were an owner. It's a big deal. It was a big
change. And it's also one where a big change where like when you're a promoter, it's like kind of book as many shows as I can. But then when you're a venue, it's I have to book shows. I have to have that calendar. And that's kind of what I learned at Crescent. You know, because that was a lot of what I was doing was the local shows and the filling, you know, kind of filling in a lot of the holes. And then so going to Rebel and it's like, oh, wait, if we don't book something, we've got an empty venue.
What's a typical night at, do you usually do two shows a night or like early show, late show or no?
Occasionally on the weekends, but most shows it's, you know, we'll have multiple artists, but, you know, normally it's one show, but Rebel Lounge is completely event driven. Like if we don't have a show, we're not open.
Right.
We're not a bar. We're not a lounge.
Right.
We're an entertainment venue. And you know, if we don't have a show, there is no show. And so
there's not like a casual DJ playing in the corner or like,
that's not what we are. We are an event space. We're a concert.
Right.
And,
right.
And then what each night is like, we book the full gamut. Like one night can be a death metal show and the next night a country show and the next show is a teen pop, you know, indie pop show. And then
that's what I love about your venue. I know that one time a friend dragged me to like a heavy metal show there and not necessarily my thing, but it was fun to experience. I'd never been to a show like that. And then I've been to like lots of other types of shows there that are, you know, more alternative or whatever. So yeah, you definitely have that sweet spot of a mix of different music genres for sure.
A lot of small promoters, and I'd probably say most small promoters are really specialists. They really focus on like a genre. There's which is the cool hip hop promoter in town. There's 13th Floor that's the cool punk rock promoter. There's Relax Presents that is the cool punk rock guy. And it's like used to be the indie guy. Now they're the big huge guy, but they used to be the little indie rock, hipster indie rock guy. And like, you know, and there's all these promoters that really kind of have their thing that they're like the best at. And I always, from the beginning, was like schizophrenic and booking a punk rock show and a metal show and an indie rock show. And like, have always been kind of all over the map. And
give people a dose of a little bit of everything. I like it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I always wanted to work with like the best of any given thing, not everything. So it's like, I want to work with the best metal bands, the best punk rock bands, the best
indie. Yeah. Well, you're doing it. And not to make you emotional, but I was going to ask you two questions. Yeah. One is, who was the very first band that played there?
Two early ones that were, you know, in the first 2 weeks that were huge was, we had GBH, old British punk rock band, who actually played their first US tour, played at the Mason Jar in 1983, the year I was born. So they were one of our first weeks, and that was a cool one.
Yeah.
Because they were super excited to be back. You know, they hadn't played the Mason Jar in 15 years or 20
years.
Yeah,
and that's a new venue, and yeah. So
that was a cool one. And then Dustin Kensrew, who is the lead singer of Thrice, he did a solo show. Okay. Those were two of the first shows we announced. And then we did a This Century, really cool local indie pop show. And those were our first three sold out shows that all happened right away when we opened. And, you know, and just even in that is like sort of the range of what we do.
So then leading up to recently, what were you guys averaging? How many nights a week were you averaging having shows before you closed?
We were doing somewhere between 25 and 35 shows a month at Rebel, you know, a couple double nights and a couple dark, you know, only a couple dark nights. Yeah. And then we were doing twice that total with Psycho Steve. So we were doing about, we did over 600 shows in 2019.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me, I mean, at least at your venue, what was the last show that happened and when did you guys have to close?
We had to close March 15th due to COVID. We had a local show on that 15th, you know, as a bunch of young bands as a matinee show.
Oh, cool.
And that was the very last show on the 15th.
Of March, you said?
March.
Okay.
And then the last big one is we did on the Friday night, either the 13th, I think. We had this band, The Frights, at Crescent Ballroom, who are great. Another one of those bands I've worked with for years, and really weird vibe because it was supposed to be the first day of their whole tour.
Uh-huh.
They were going to do Tucson, and then they were going to do South by Southwest, and then they were going to do their whole album release tour, and most of the dates were sold out, and, you know, South by canceled, and then bunch of the rest of the tour canceled, and then they were going to come out and just do the two Arizona shows, and then on Thursday, we had to cancel the Saturday. Tucson put their, you know, closing orders.
Yeah.
That we're going to apply to the Saturday. So on Thursday, I called the agent and said, you know, we can't do Tucson, but it looks like we can still do Phoenix. What do you want to do? And the band was like, well, we'll just come out and do Phoenix. We at least want to do one show of the tour. And
aww.
Then that was the last night at Crescent. The next night.
Definitely bittersweet for the band and you guys and Crescent as well.
Ugh. It was totally a weird vibe because the show is totally sold out. The audience was really into it. And it had this weird, we don't know when we're going to be able to do shows again. What was supposed to be their biggest headline tour ever, you know, turned into one show in Phoenix. We were joking about how I sold out the entire tour.
That is true. You could put that on your resume.
Yeah, I sold out the entire tour. And, you know.
So, you know, obviously this leads to the conversation of, you know, especially right now, why I wanted to interview you. And that is that, you know, everyone listening obviously knows that because of this pandemic, the entire world is seeing, you know, huge cancellation of all sorts of events, but especially live concerts, you know, that you're going to get anywhere from what, 100 to thousands of people in one room. That just can't happen right now. And that's your entire life. So that organization that started during COVID, what has been your focus within that organization? What is the overall focus of that effort? And what are some cool things that you guys have done in, you know, lobbying the government and just talk about the campaign in general and even how people can get involved.
Yeah, so I helped form a new organization. It's a new trade organization representing venues, promoters, and festivals called the National Independent Venue Association, NIVA. Uh-huh. I somehow ended up on the board. I'm one of the vice presidents, and I'm kind of in charge of all things membership. And it grew out of, there's this program called Independent Venue Week that okay. was brought over here 3 years ago now.
From Europe? Or?
Yeah, it was an English initiative years ago. And then they started it in Europe or in England a few years ago. And then 3 years ago, this company Marauder, which is a music marketing promotion agency, brought it over here, and we were involved with it last year.
Okay.
And it's kind of like Record Store Day for venues is what it's called. Sort of like it's just an excuse for everyone to wave the flag and celebrate independence. Very similar to like Local First's Indie Week here.
Yeah, and speaking of them, the owner of Local First, or the founder of Local First, was the one that started Modified Arts, right?
Yeah, so that's how I met her 20 years ago.
In Berlanding.
And also Stinkweeds.
And Stinkweeds Records in Phoenix,
Yeah, but so Independent Venue Week was kind of this Record Store Day-esque initiative where it really was just an excuse for everyone to wave the flag.
Yeah.
So when the venues started shutting down, even before we shut down that week, the 12th or that week right before we shut down.
Globally, did it kind of happen, or nationally, did it kind of just happen starting in March for most people?
Yeah. South by Southwest went down like the first of March or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the first domino and everything started following. And, you know, by that middle week of March, it was everywhere. But, you know, at that time, it felt like it was all on different timelines, but in retrospect, it all happened in like 2 weeks.
Right.
It was like, and so Reverend Moose from Independent Venue Week sent out this email to all the venues. There was like 100 of us that were going to be.
And where is he based?
He's in New York. But he threw out this email to all the venues that were part of Independent Venue Week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposed to be on there. We were doing a panel on Independent Venue Week at South by Southwest that I was going to be on. And that obviously got canceled. And
right. So
the first week where things started coming down before they even got canceled in Arizona, he threw out this email, hey, let's all get on a call and talk about what we're seeing. And
yeah. So
100 of us got on this call and said, this is what's going on in Arizona, and this is what's going on in Chicago. And this is what we're all seeing. And
but it was probably really therapeutic for all of you to be like, we're all going through this together, you know, within that industry. Yeah.
First couple were very informative, you know, very information sharing, you know, mm-hmm. what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What's going on in your city?
And like, what are we supposed to do?
And then after like the second, we did it the next week, and then we've been doing it every Thursday since then. Then after the second or third call, we realized that this was going to be long right away. Like, I knew this was not going to be, like, I think a lot of people thought, oh, we're going to be locked down for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. And we knew it was, like, I don't think we realized it was going to be this long, but we knew it was going to be long and that it was going to be really hard for the venues. And no one was talking about the venues. No one was talking about the
industry. What you guys are supposed to do. Yeah.
Everyone was talking about sports. Everyone was talking about everyone was talking about the arena shows, and no one was talking about us. And a group of 30 or so of us got together and were like, we need to start something formal.
Mm-hmm.
Some ticketing partners were like, what are you guys going to do? We want to support. So we found a couple of sponsors.
Sponsoring. Cool.
Who were committed to supporting the ecosystem. And we had some elections. There's a board created. Somehow I ended up on it. And
not somehow. You have quite the background in this industry. It started in April, right?
Yeah, or end of March, beginning of April. I think we announced and went public in April. Hired a really awesome lobbyist in D.C.
Cool.
And started the Save Our Stages campaign, hashtag Save Our Stages. And the website. And, you know, if you go to that website, there's a form to fill out that writes your congresspeople.
Awesome.
Your congressmen and senators, and we've now sent over 2 million emails through that website to Congress.
Great. Is there anything else people, you know, outside of your board can do to, can they sponsor? Can they donate money? Can they?
Yeah, we've now, at first we were all about, when we first started, we were all about the lobbying effort and we just wanted people's voices. And at the time, everyone was, all the venues were doing these GoFundMe sort of campaigns, and we don't want to suck the air out of what all these venues are already doing. Like, we want to be helping them, not detracting from them. So at that time, we weren't really trying to get donations,
right,
other than sort of sponsors and where they came in. And
I know a big focus of the lobbying, right, was to try to get some government funding for right?
That's the entire focus.
Yeah.
We were the first businesses to close.
Yeah.
We're going to be the last businesses to open. No one thinks that we're opening anytime soon.
No.
Most predictions are the earliest is sometime next summer. We're probably 10 months from opening. And we are closed to protect the public good. And we need the public to protect us in exchange for that. And
so how's it going at the government level? I mean, has there been any legislation introduced or anything?
Yeah, there's three bills that we're supporting, two of which were written for us. The main one being the Save Our Stages Act. It is a grant program through the SBA for
Small Business Association.
Yeah, through the Small Business Association. It would be a grant program run by them for small music venues, promoters, talent representatives, and would be a grant program to help them, to help all of us survive this. And it's a grant program that's specifically designed for us, for businesses that are completely shuttered, because, you know, most of our members haven't made any revenue in 6 months.
What constitutes an independent music venue? Is it the capacity?
It's definitely not the capacity.
Okay.
So not being publicly traded, being multinational, and, you know, not operating in, you know, crazy too many states. And so, you know, the Save Our Stages Act is actually based on the rules I helped write for NEVA membership. You know, and so it's trying to get at that, you know, the people that can't go to Wall Street, can't go to funds, you know,
specialized loan program for that.
Yeah, aren't the arenas, but we do include, we include a lot of different people in our membership. We include music festivals, we include comedy clubs, we include concert promoters. We keep festivals to performance-based festivals, so music festivals. We're not trying to be every street fair or that have performance as a big component of it, but it's everywhere from Broadway to the trunk space to, you know, Red Rocks in Denver is a member, and we're including for NEVA venues that are for-profit businesses, nonprofit associations, and we're even including city and government-owned venues. So like Mesa Arts Center is a member, and, you know, so it's everything from Modified to Celebrity Theater to Mesa Arts Center and everything.
Yeah, if they're a good fit, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I shared this earlier in the podcast, but, you know, I obviously just moved from Phoenix to Flagstaff. So I've been seeing the Orpheum up here, I know, promoting promoting the effort, promoting the campaign. I assume they're involved, it looks like.
Yeah, they were a very early member and, you know, being pretty involved as far as all the Arizona members. And, you know, and that one of the ones was just getting us all on the same page, because there's never been a national association that covers all of us. And there's a Broadway, an organization that kind of represents all the Broadway theaters, and there's organizations that represent all the performing arts centers.
Yeah, essentially this didn't exist before.
Yeah, and there's some organizations that cover some of our members and not others.
Right.
You know, there's a Black Promoters Association. But there wasn't one that covered all of us. And so that's what NEVA's trying to be. And our goal really is to build it into a permanent, lasting organization that survives this crisis. And that's what we're building, trying to build. And so a lot of my time is spent on the more of those long-term projects to really build it as a permanent organization that can last. And
hopefully
the lobbying is successful and we get
so with your membership focus, what are you guys up to? How many members?
We're just under 3,000 members.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
And each one of the members, to be clear, is the business or a business. So like any one members covers a lot of employees. We cover everything from a one-person operation.
To
if your business is a one-person business and you're a promoter, then you're covered. I mean, it really is basically everyone except for Live Nation and AEG. They're the two big corporate behemoths you know, and so
they're on their own. They're on their own.
I mean, they've got their own interests. They're totally,
absolutely, you
know, they're dealing with this too, but like their interests and concerns are so different than ours. And like, they have access to capital on what, you know, they're publicly traded or own, you know, they've just got a different set of issues than what we have. I mean, we're both dealing with COVID. Like we've got the same problem, but like how that affects us versus how it affects them is just very different.
So, you know, obviously because live concerts, as you mentioned, you know, for the foreseeable future aren't going to be happening. What are some cool things that you're seeing?
Yeah. I mean, you're seeing a lot of artists streaming. Streaming is definitely a huge thing for artists to connect with their fans. Yeah, streaming is great for the artists, and you know, there's some money for the mid-size artists are making some money, which is great for them, like awesome, like they, you know, they need it. A lot of artists need it, but it's just like, it is not a business strategy for most venues and promoters to pivot to.
Sure.
You know, we need novelty right now. It's cool for the fans, but it's not a business strategy for venues and promoters.
What about what we're seeing, not to compare it, but so like sports. So they're trying to say that, you know, they play, but there's no fans, which was essentially could be a thing for music. Is that something that you guys are looking at?
No, because that is, I mean, that's what streaming's trying to be. But the thing with sports is it's all about the TV revenue. I mean, the TV revenue, Monday Night Football alone, 18 games generates $2 billion for the NFL. Just the 18 games of Monday Night Football is $2 billion.
I watch about zero per year.
the ticket sales for the audience is it's a piece of the pie for sports,
yeah,
but it's not the big piece of the pie. It's not the bulk of the business. And so for sports, you know, the NBA will be all right. I mean, they'll take a hit this year, but, you know, the TV rights for sports are so gigantic that it makes sense to do it without an audience. Oh, the number of conversations I've had on streaming in the last 6 months, it's just
all. But I mean, like, are we gonna ever see Band X on the Rebel Lounge stage? Live or not, you know, recorded and played somewhere.
Yeah, we've done a few. We've got a couple this weekend that are ticketed streams. So
the okay, cool.
Is doing this weekend. We pre-recorded School of Rock did their concert at Rebel that they're streaming. Like, it's definitely happening, and we're doing it at Rebel, but like,
yeah,
our efforts at Rebel are really about supporting the artists and just doing something cool. Like, all these streams we're doing are not the same as one mediocre show as far as revenue. You know, we're
and then as far and then as far as how, what you charge people for watching it on their computer or their phone versus live is got to be, you know, a percentage, right?
Not necessarily, because you're dealing with a live stream, you're dealing with the worldwide audience. You're dealing with the worldwide fan base. So you're not thinking about how many fans are there in Arizona, how many fans are there when we go play Texas, how many fans are there when we go play California.
Okay.
I guess,
does the ticket pricing change at all, the model and structure of that?
Yeah, I mean, the tickets are definitely cheaper than, you know, what most people think of concert tickets. For us at Rebel, they're, you know, the streams we're doing are like $10 or something.
Okay.
A lot of our shows are kind of that price range anyway, but the better shows, it's definitely a lot cheaper than, so.
Okay, well, I mean, you talked so much about, you know, obviously your background in this industry and how you got started and, you know, this new NEVA organization that you're involved with. It sounds like you're doing great work for them too, just like you do for everything. So thank you for talking about that campaign. And I know that there's a lot more that you guys are talking about on a weekly basis that's still to come and still to be announced. So something kind of fun, are there any national or international bands that you've really, you know, grown to love during this pandemic?
Been listening to a lot of old stuff, which I usually never do. I've just been listening to all the stuff I used to listen to in high school and like Jimmy World and the Foo Fighters and stuff. But one neat one to check out, a band I've worked with a number of times before, we've had at Rebel. I booked them at Crescent before that. Newer, young band called 76th Street. They're Phoenix-based. They're excellent. They've got this song that came out a couple months ago called We Were Free. It's the most adorable, cute love song. What about
nationally? Any up-and-coming artists or musicians that you found recently?
What I finally have really dove into, although they've been buzzing for a while, is Black Pumas.
Okay.
Cool rock and roll band out of Texas. I've been listening to them a bit, and then...
what a cool freaking name.
Yeah, Black Pumas. They're great. Kind of a Gary Clark Jr., Leon Bridges kind of vibe.
Oh, cool.
Really cool. That's a band I've been listening to a bit since all this. But honestly, it's like, before, so much of my day always was listening to new music. And then now that it's kind of not being forced on me for the first time in a long time. And so just with everything else, I haven't been listening to as much music as I used to. Because of COVID, you know, so many of the conversations I have, very few are about bands anymore. We're talking about artists in general and the artist community. We spend all the time talking about that.
Right.
How we're supporting artists.
How are you going to help them? What's going on with it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, how are we supporting artists? How are artists working with us? It's about the system and like the individual calls of, you know, my inbox used to just be daily bands reaching out, agents reaching out, management saying, here's this new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is so much of my day before this. And then now since that, it just haven't been as much.
Through all this, you know, you've joined this new organization. You're super involved. You're doing, you know, all the way up to the federal level, you know, some lobbying, some membership outreach all over the country. That's a really great skill building for anyone. So I think that at least it's a way for you to keep busy and do something important. This is really important work you guys are doing. And, I guess my question would be, you know, are there enough people already in the legislature to think about this as a priority? And if not, you know, have you considered running for office?
Oh God, no. Tell me anything, it's the opposite of that.
It's made you not want to run for office?
We've had a lot of great support on our initiative. It's been completely bipartisan, which is a word you don't hear in politics right now.
Absolutely.
You know, we've had a lot of great support. You know, there's even a law written for us right now that hopefully someday will pass, hopefully someday very, 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 very soon will pass. You know, so a lot of people being supportive, but yeah, running for office does not sound fun.
Okay, you don't want to add that to your list. So obviously the Save Our Stages campaign and that bill, right, is working its way through. You said there's a couple others that you guys have had your lobbyists put forth. How can people stay informed, follow what calls for action they can do specifically for NEVA? What is that website?
Yeah, it's just saveourstages.com, and there's a great form right on there. You can, in 30 seconds, write your congressman asking for support. You can buy merch, you can donate, you can read about what we're
Oh, you guys creating. Have merch. You didn't mention that.
Oh, yeah. There's Save Our Stages shirts and masks. There's a few different things up there, but...
Of course there's merch. It's music-related. And then how do people find out more about, you know, Psycho Seed Presents as well as the Rebel Lounge, you know, once that all gets going again?
Yeah, it's just psychosteve.com and therebellounge.com.
And is Save Our Stages, are they on Instagram and all that?
NEVA is on all the things.
The hashtag to follow is hashtag Save Our Stages.
Yeah.
Well, I hope people that are listening, you gave such a good explanation of what all you guys have been up to, and it's not like, you know, your venue closed and you've just been sitting around eating bonbons. So I'm really proud of you as your friend. And it sounds like you guys are doing amazing, amazing work for the industry. And I hope that it all comes to fruition. And it sounds like you guys have already made some incredible progress. Hopefully that only continues. I hope that all the listeners will check out the NEVA website, the saveourstages.com. Check out Psycho Steve Presents, check out the Rebel Lounge. And, you know, if any of those places are offering a live streaming opportunity, I hope you'll take advantage of it. You know, you've got to do your part as fans to help support these musicians and bands and everyone in the industry right now. So sounds like that's how to do it. And you are such a wealth of information in this arena. I appreciate you for coming on the show so much, Stephen. And thank you all so much for listening. I will see y'all in 2 weeks.